not too grand to help, and handed her a pile of forks. "Thanks." Cherry began to carefully lay them out, and suddenly knew how best to play this woman, who would not like her to outshine her own daughter. She buried the perverse urge to do just that. It wouldn't exactly be hard. Bridget was clearly thick as mince. No, instead she'd pretend to be polite and pleasant, meek almost.
"Hey!" exclaimed an outraged voice, and Cherry idly lifted her head. "My dress is in the swimming pool."
Nicole looked angrily around, and stopped when she came to Cherry. Not intimidated, Cherry met her gaze, cutlery clutched in both hands.
"What's happened?" said Bridget. "My dress, it is soaking."
"It must have been the breeze," said Daniel.
Nicole was forced back inside and had to borrow something of Bridget's while the sodden dress was hung over a lemon tree. Cherry found herself next to Nicole at dinner. Daniel was on the other side, next to Isabella.
"Poor you," Cherry said in her ear. "I hope it's not ruined."
Later that night, Cherry and Daniel lay curled up together on crisp cotton sheets. Their room was facing the back. When Cherry had closed the shutters, the sea had looked black. She was looking forward to throwing them open in the morning and seeing it clear blue on a new day. In fact, she could hardly believe her luck. The villa was incredible and the location dreamlike. The rest of the weekend was going to be spent with Daniel as much as she could possibly manufacture it.
"I'm sorry again about tonight," he murmured, nuzzling her ear sleepily.
"Don't be."
"You were magnificent."
Cherry smiled and ran her fingers across his chest.
"Did you..."
"What?"
"The dress."
"Course not."
Daniel opened his eyes, and she met his gaze innocently.
"Like you said, it was the breeze."
He smiled and then kissed her, and she rolled on top of him and kissed him some more.
12. Saturday, June 21. Cherry woke late the next day and saw Daniel was still asleep. She lay there quietly, enjoying the peace and privacy before Laura, whom she could hear moving about the house, hit them with whatever plans she had for the day. A thin band of light outlined the shutters, telling Cherry it was sunny outside, and she was itching to get up. But at the same time, she didn't want to leave the sanctuary of the bedroom and get roped into some sightseeing. Feeling trapped, she resented Laura's overpowering presence. He stretched beside her.
"Morning. I haven't been snoring, have I?"
She laughed and indicated the window.
"No. Ready for some sunshine?"
"Do I not get a kiss first?"
he said, but she'd already jumped up and was opening the shutters, as she'd longed to do since last night. The sunlit sea welcomed her, and it was glorious. Daniel winced, and she bounded back onto the bed, kissed him.
"Let's go to the beach."
"Is that what you want to do today? Only, I think my mum might have an idea about surprising us with a fully comprehensive tour of the region's vineyards."
He saw the crestfallen face that she tried unsuccessfully to hide.
"Okay, let's do it."
"I feel bad now," said Cherry. "If she's gone to a lot of trouble..."
He pulled her back down onto the bed and wrapped his arms around her.
"Don't be daft. She won't mind."
After they made love, they surfaced for a late breakfast. Laura, pleased to see them, hovered around the croissants and made them fresh coffee.
"Did you sleep well? Hope the bed was all right. I was thinking that we could all explore today. Would you like to go to the Chateau Minuti? The Maton Farnay have been in the wine industry for almost 3 centuries.
She smiled at them, unable to contain her exuberance.
"Mum, that's a really nice idea, but I think we might go to the beach today. First day of the holidays and all that."
"Oh, right. Good idea."
To Cherry's horror, it looked like Laura was about to invite herself along.
"I was going to take my books down there, do a bit of studying,"
Cherry said quickly.
"You've brought work as well," said Daniel.
"Estate agency exam's coming up soon after I get back."
"I suppose I should take mine. We can test each other."
That was enough to exclude her, noted Cherry, and Laura murmured something about them all meeting up later in the day, before going off to get a book to read by the pool. Daniel drove to Pompilon, a 3-mile stretch of golden sand that had fueled Saint-Tropez's fame since the 1950s. Even though it was still only mid-June, he'd insisted they book, as he did not want to be traipsing up and down the beach trying to find a space.
On arrival, Cherry learned that he was referring not to a table for lunch, but to a sun lounger. Much of the beach was sectioned off to private clubs, and already they were filling up. She caught sight of the total on the handheld card payer as Daniel typed in his PIN, and her eyes widened. €80 for 2 sunbeds, and you didn't even get a towel. They'd both brought their own. Daniel knew the drill, and she had already packed one out of habit from childhood visits to Brighton, sitting on the cold stones, shivering after braving the rough grey waves. Here the sea was a clear aquamarine, and the waves made a little plip sound as they flopped, seemingly exhausted, onto the beach. Cherry lay down on the lounger next to Daniel, and the umbrella cast a welcome shade over her, for it was already hot. She looked up and saw her umbrella was made up of circular stripes of orange and white, striking against the clear blue sky. They continued across their section of the beach, a pattern of orange and white circles, like humbugs. Out to sea were the yachts, gleaming white and bobbing gently on the water. Some were ostentatious, some merely grand.
"Hey, there's Bridget," said Daniel, and Cherry's heart sank. She looked up to see a group of people stepping out of a motorboat that had just beached itself on the sand. They bounded up to them, wet legs stuck with sand. Cherry saw that along with Bridget had come Nicole and one other girl, plus 2 young guys, all young, tanned and beautiful, and all in swimwear. They arrived and flung themselves down on the sand, sitting with arms outstretched behind them. One of the guys casually lifted his to summon a waiter for some drinks. Introductions were made, and Cherry was pleased to see that Nicole refused to meet her eye and sat a distance away from both her and Daniel. The other girl was also French, a friend of Nicole's. The 2 guys were boyfriends, but she couldn't quite make out who was with whom. She had to rely on who was rubbing on whose suntan lotion or playfully caressing whose hair, although none of this was a guarantee of attachment. They spoke about trivial things, parties and each other. They consistently teased one another, throwing sand onto the girls' flat stomachs. As she listened, it transpired that they were spending the day on Nicole's father's yacht, although Cherry couldn't work out which of the luxurious floating white islands out there was his. She briefly wondered if this was what these people did most summers, and almost immediately knew the answer, and also knew she was probably only glimpsing the tip of their privileged iceberg. She noticed that Daniel, although polite, seemed content just to lie back and listen idly. After a while, the drinks were finished, and Cole stood and asked if they wanted to go onto the yacht. Cherry stiffened. She most definitely did not. While the others were there, she felt she had to keep up some sort of required ebullience, or at the very least alertness, and smile and nod at the right places in the conversation, when all she wanted to do was read her book. Except if Daniel was going, then she would too. She waited for him to answer, and was pleased when he politely said he'd maybe join them later. "You okay?"
Daniel asked her casually after they'd left, as if knowing she'd felt a little out of her depth.
"Fine."
"Peaceful, isn't it?"
She giggled. "Yes."
"Book time?"
"You took the words right out of my mouth." And so they both settled back on their lounges, he with some cycling book and she with an old Persephone classic. Before she opened it, she looked up at the sky. She liked its vastness and the way, if she followed it to the horizon, she could see the curve of the earth. It made her feel like she had a place in the world, as if she could get perspective on all that was around her. She drank this in for a moment, gaining strength and peace from the steady expanse of blue. Then she started to read. Before long, her eyes started to droop heavily. She woke with the sensation of someone stroking her calf. Lifting her head, she peered down to see Daniel gently applying some sunscreen.
"I moved the umbrella," he said, pointing. "But your leg was still getting the full glare of the sun."
"What time is it?" she asked groggily.
1.
"Already?"
She'd been asleep nearly an hour, and the sun had moved higher in the sky and was hotter than ever.
She watched, smiling, as he continued to carefully apply lotion, his hand moving higher up her leg. He stopped at the top of her thigh, humming, pretending not to notice where his hands were. He hesitated a moment, his finger stroking the top of her leg, and then grinned teasingly.
"All done."
"Thanks."
"You're welcome. Fancy a swim before lunch?"
They went hand in hand down to the sea, and when they reached the water, she scrunched her toes up in anticipation of the chill. But it was deliciously warm. She waded in, Daniel diving into the wave in front of her, and then he stood and splashed and she squealed. She took her revenge by scooping a cascade of water into his face, and the war was on. she realized she was falling for him. Yes, she loved his life and she wanted it for herself. But she was also enjoying his company. She'd picked a man who was fun, decent too. After lunch, they swam again and then returned to their sunbeds. Cherry was careful to back up her earlier claim and diligently pulled out some workbooks. He felt he ought to do some too, and the two of them spent a couple of hours studying, looking up at each other, and baffling one another with excerpts from their texts. When it got cooler, Cherry said she was hungry and they wandered along the harbour front, looking for somewhere to eat. Daniel texted Laura to say they decided to stay in Saint-Tropez for dinner, and they ordered Lincourt sole meunière and a bottle of Semillon. It was from the Minuti estate, noticed Cherry, as a waiter poured her a glass. Funny to think, if things had gone differently, she would have been there today. She wondered if Laura would be annoyed they hadn't spent the day with her. It was late evening when they got back to the house, just as Laura was about to leave.
"Oh, you're back," she said. "I waited a while. Have you had a good day?"
Daniel dumped the beach bag on the worktop.
"Great, thanks, Mum. You?"
"Quiet. Relaxing,"
Laura quickly corrected.
"Where are you going?"
"Vincent's. I booked a table."
Daniel looked surprised.
"On your own?"
"Well, I did book it for 3, but it's no problem," she smiled. "I've let him know it's just me now."
"Oh, I'm sorry."
He looked contrite.
"We should have come back.
Honestly, it's fine."
Cherry thought she ought to add her apologies at this point. "Sorry, Laura, if we'd known..." She thought she saw a flicker of irritation cross Laura's face before...
"Not to worry."
"It was thoughtless."
Daniel moved over to the fridge, opened it and peered inside.
"Tell you what, I'll cook you something."
"No, honestly..."
Laura stood.
"Vincent's expecting me. He wanted to catch up with the family news."
"You sure?"
"Of course."
"Sorry, again. I don't know why I didn't think to check or anything. Cherry just said she was famished and we went and grabbed something."
She hadn't been that hungry, remembered Cherry. She'd just said she was because she preferred eating alone with Daniel to having his mother tag along. It would have been more polite, more friendly to wait, but it was only one night, for God's sake. It wasn't like she hadn't done the whole family and friends thing the night before. Laura could hardly expect them not to want to be alone at some point. In fact, she thought, with a touch of irritation, if she'd stopped trying to be there the whole bloody time, she might not find herself alone at dinner. Laura looked across to Cherry and smiled.
"Right, well, I'd better go. The reservation's at 9.
"We'll come with you. Have a nightcap or something," said Daniel.
Cherry really didn't want to. She was tired after a day of sun and half a bottle of wine, but she smiled, as if she thought the plan was a good one. Laura hesitated.
"No, it's all right. You've been out all day. I expect you just want to relax a bit. I'll be perfectly fine on my own."
She grabbed her jacket and bag and kissed Daniel's cheek.
"See you both later."
"Sorry again, Laura. We'll call next time," said Cherry. Laura nodded and left the house. As the door shut, Cherry pulled a face.
"I feel bad."
"Yes, me too," said Daniel. "Maybe we should spend a bit of time with her tomorrow."
"I was thinking the same thing. Do you think your mum would enjoy a relaxing day by the pool? We could cook lunch, make up for tonight," said Cherry,
and her burst of benevolence was rewarded with a hug. Laura came home to a quiet house. A light was left burning for her. It wasn't quite 11. There was a note on the table. "Waited up for a while, but fell asleep on the couch. Hope you had a great night. Fancy a day by the pool tomorrow. We're doing lunch." Daniel had signed it from himself and Cherry. She listened but could hear nothing, and so went to bed alone. 13. Sunday, June 22. The next morning, Laura expected Daniel and Cherry to rise late again, but to her surprise, they'd already gotten up and had breakfast by the time she followed the waft of fresh coffee into the kitchen. She could hear them laughing and chatting outside. She liked listening to their youthful exuberance and enthusiasm, their limitless energy for what they wanted to do with their lives, with no sense at all that the energy might run out or the beliefs might change. The mix of determination and idealism was exciting. She especially liked not knowing how it was all going to turn out, the joyful anticipation as you reached every milestone in a child's life. Would it be a girl or a boy? What would they look like? What would their personality be like? How would they get on at school? Who would their friends be? What would they choose to study, choose to become? Having a child was the very best kind of lottery. She still thought of Rose like that every time Daniel reached a touchstone, just briefly, a curious, painful wondering that would never be answered. She poured herself a coffee and took a fresh croissant from the paper bag. Carrying the plate and a cup and saucer, she made her way onto the terrace. She stopped almost immediately, at the sight of Cherry brushing her hand across Daniel's stomach, as they both lay back on side-by-side lounges, eyes closed against the sun. Cherry's hand went lower, and her fingers tucked themselves into the top of Daniel's shorts, and, Lordy, Laura thought she saw a twitch. She was torn between a polite but firm cough or silently turning and slipping back inside, and the hesitation cost Laura her anonymity. Cherry had opened her eyes, and for a moment, her hand had stayed where it was. She looked at Laura, and then slowly removed it. She looked embarrassed. Laura decided it was kindest to ignore it.
"Good morning,"
she said, walking across and taking her place by the pool. "Oh, hi, Mum," said Daniel, with a conspiratorial grin across at Cherry. "How is Vincent?"
"Very well. Wanted to know everything you'd been up to. I tried to fill him in as best I could, but you've yet to tell me much," she said lightly. "He wanted to meet you too, Cherry, and says there's a table for you tonight before you fly home, if you'd like. No pressure, but if you do decide to go over, he'll find you some space."
"How nice," said Cherry. Laura glanced up, but Cherry had closed her eyes. Daniel pulled on Cherry's hand.
"Come on, time for a swim. Are you coming in, Mum?"
She didn't much feel like it. She'd wait until they got out, do a few calm lengths.
"Just going to have my breakfast first."
They got into the pool.
"Is it cold?"
called Laura, already knowing the answer by Cherry's squeals. It was a little pathetic, she recognized, being unable to make conversation. But no one answered. They didn't hear. They were so absorbed in each other. And Laura watched them for a while from behind her sunglasses as she bit into her croissant. There wasn't much actual swimming going on, more ducking, splashing, arms wrapped around each other. She looked away, feeling excluded and, she was ashamed to admit, rather jealous and lonely. They climbed out about 5 minutes later and lay with arms hanging down, fingers surreptitiously meeting and touching. Laura decided to go in, swam for a bit and then floated, gazing up at the sky. She felt weightless, and with her ears underwater, the sound of her thoughts became filtered and pure. So far this trip, she'd felt distant, out of sync. When she was in the pool, her son and his girlfriend were out with eyes closed. When she wanted to go for dinner, they'd already done so and were heading for bed. When she suggested a day out in the countryside, they'd already decided on the beach. It wasn't quite how she'd envisaged Cherry's visit. She smiled inwardly. She was being silly. Laura had hoped to get to know Cherry a bit, and found herself wondering why Daniel's girlfriend didn't seem to want to talk much. She might have made a bit of an effort, seeing as she was a guest in the house. Laura stretched out in the water. Never mind. Let them have their time together. Cherry was leaving the next day. She climbed out and went back to her lounger. Cherry was talking in that low, private voice that was exclusive to lovers, and Laura pulled out her book and started to read. She awoke to find both of them gone. Groggy, she sat up and reached for her watch to check the time. It was noon. She suddenly saw Cherry in the doorway of the house, looking at her. Had she just arrived, or had she been watching a while? Laura pulled her wrap around her and sat up.
"We made lunch," said Cherry, and she went back inside.
They ate together, and then Laura, knowing she couldn't face another afternoon playing third wheel, decided to go out for the rest of the day. As she left, she was aware she felt uncomfortable in her own home. On Cherry's last day, Laura felt a little guilty about her churlish thoughts and resolved to make one last effort before the girl went home.
"What time's your flight today, Cherry? I was wondering if you'd like to see some of the smaller villages up the coast before you go."
"Oh," said Cherry, looking to Daniel for reinforcement. "I'm actually due quite a bit of leave. My boss has said he'd prefer it if I took it now, rather than in the middle of summer when everyone else wants to go away. I know it's a bit last minute, a bit cheeky, and please say no if it's not possible."
Laura tried to keep the welcoming smile on her face. "You mean you'd like to stay a bit longer?"
"That's incredibly kind of you," said Cherry. Her face lit up in the first genuine smile that Laura felt was actually directed at her.
"That's okay, isn't it, Mum?"
"Of course it is,"
said Laura, recovering just in time.
"How long? Do you have a lot of holiday to use up?"
A fair bit. Mum, we were thinking of doing that trip to the vineyard you suggested. Fancy it?
Laura was still thrown by the revelation that her houseguest didn't seem to be leaving after all that morning. In fact, she didn't seem to be leaving any time soon.
No, it's okay. You go. I might go over and see Isabella today.
They left soon after, and Laura made herself a cup of coffee and took it out onto the terrace. She realized she was distinctly heavy-hearted about the next few days. Isabella was more philosophical about the situation.
Darling, it's nice she wants to stay longer. Shows she's keen to get on with you.
Does it?
Of course. Otherwise she'd be leaving on the first plane out.
They watched as the pool boy methodically scooped out some leaves, moving the net slowly through the water.
There's something really calming about him, don't you think? Said Isabella. His movements, like some kind of Tai Chi.
Is he new?
Madame Baudin's son.
Isabella smiled naughtily. He's come of age. Laura lowered her sunglasses, both horrified and amused. Isabella, you are not—
Oh, darling, relax. I just like to look.
She turned back to Laura.
I quite liked Cherry, actually, despite my earlier misgivings. She seemed quite charming, happy to pitch in. Anyway, I thought it's what you wanted. One big, happy family.
Well, yes, except I get the feeling she doesn't want to let me in. In fact, Laura laughed uncomfortably, I'd go as far to say she wishes I weren't there.
Really?
Why? I don't know. Just a feeling. She doesn't talk to me much. Open up.
Darling, give her a chance. She's only just met you. Probably terrified of you.
Laura looked astonished. Whatever for?
You're the mother of her new boyfriend, and you always were very protective of him.
Laura laughed.
What on earth are you talking about? Come on. You were always the territorial one at the playgroups. A real tiger mother. Do you remember the time you pinched that little boy? He was only about two.
He bit Daniel on the leg, drew blood. There was a row of teeth marks on him for days.
And wasn't there some incident with a kid in Daniel's class? I seem to remember a cricket bat. And did the boy not end up crying or something and then leave the school?
Laura's gaze turned to the pool boy.
Do you remember being young? Late teens, early twenties? I seem to remember a lot of parties, at least going to them. But funnily enough, not a lot of detail.
I wonder what Rose would have been like.
Beautiful and talented, probably. Like her mother.
Laura smiled. It's funny with Cherry. I was hoping...
Oh, no, darling, said Isabella quickly. Don't hope that.
I know. Silly, said Laura. Fanciful, really.
They sat, both enjoying the measured, slow movements of the pool boy, the regular whoosh of the water, and the drip, drip, drip as he lifted his net. When Laura got back to the house, Cherry and Daniel were still out. She made herself a bit of lunch, but picked at it. Then, suddenly impatient, she knew this was an opportunity she should be making the most of. After all, she had the place to herself and could enjoy the peace, could swim in the pool without feeling like a third wheel. She went to her room and changed into a bikini. On the way back, as she passed Daniel and Cherry's room, she noticed the door was ajar. She stopped and was about to close it, but then, propelled by longing to be closer to her houseguest, peeped through the gap. She stood with her feet safely on the neutral flooring of the landing and cast her eyes about the room. Two suitcases were stacked neatly against the wall, the clothes hung up in wardrobes. A wayward sleeve jutted through the gap between the doors. Some clothes were cast on the chair, some shorts of Daniel's and a T-shirt of Cherry's she'd seen her in the night before. The bed was roughly made, the summer duvet pulled up to reach the pillows. On the dresser were receipts, boarding pass coupons, their passports and some books. Laura recognized one of her own favorites and, without realizing she was doing so, walked into the room and picked it up. Flicked it open to the folded-down corner and smiled, recalling the passage and the story. Was it Cherry's? She instantly warmed to her. There was a reassurance to actually knowing something about her, even something as innocuous as the book she liked to read. See, they had things in common, and there was certainly no need for Cherry to be anxious around her. Spurred on by this cheering information, Laura looked around, picked up a passport and turned to the back.
It was Daniel's, and she laughed at his very serious 16-year-old face. She'd taken him to have the photo done for a school trip to Burma. Should she? Oh, what harm could it do? It was practically an established ritual, comparing passport photos. She picked up Cherry's. Her photo was equally serious. She flicked through, and there was just the one visa entry stamp in it for Australia. Conscious she'd crossed the boundaries of the passport photo game, she quickly put it back. She stood there for a second, not yet wanting to leave, aware that this was the closest she'd been to Cherry since she'd arrived 3 days ago, and Laura wanted to know more, to close the gap between them. At the same time, she knew she was trespassing, and the insight wasn't being freely given. She gazed around the room, frustrated that she still knew so little about this girl who'd captured Daniel's heart, frustrated that Cherry hadn't let her in. There was something sticking out of the back of the book. It must have slipped when she was looking through it. She could see it was Cherry's flight ticket, and she was just tucking it back in when she frowned. Open return. Laura pulled the ticket from the book. The flight out was for the previous Friday to Nice, £500. There was no return flight booked. Why would Cherry have only booked one portion of the flight? She'd always known she was originally going home today. Laura scanned the printout, looking for something to explain... what? A bird flew close past the window and its abrupt movement startled her. She suddenly felt uncomfortable in the room and quickly put the ticket back. She hurried out and carefully pulled the door back to the same degree of opening as when she'd found it. Out at the pool, she lay on the sunbed, but couldn't settle. It was a grubby thing going through someone's belongings, and Laura was unnerved not just at how she'd done it, but how quickly and easily she'd rooted around, picking things up, snooping through Cherry's possessions, her private papers. She was embarrassed, ashamed. And yet there was something about that ticket that she couldn't shake, something that made her uneasy. Maybe the water would cleanse, clear her head. She waded in and set herself a task of 100 lengths. 6, 7 decent strokes, and she'd reach the end of the pool. Break her focus. Why hadn't Cherry booked a flight home again? When Daniel and Cherry came back later that afternoon, she was in the kitchen preparing dinner. Cherry went to change, and Laura waited until she was safely upstairs and they heard the showers start to run. She started to wash the salad leaves she'd picked from the garden. Daniel was sitting at the large table, enjoying a glass of wine with her. It was the kind of moment she usually loved, just the two of them doing nothing much, and she realized they hadn't done this since he'd come back from university. "You're so meticulous," he said, amused as she held each leaf individually under the tap, inspecting them thoroughly as the water trickled over. "You'd be amazed where they hide. Look, see? I nearly missed that one." "Would it be really so bad if you ate a few?" "Don't be disgusting." He laughed and watched as she shook the leaves dry and put them in a bowl. Then she started chopping some cherry tomatoes. "They from the garden as well?" "A couple of early ones." She threw one at him, and he darted his hand out but missed. He picked it up off the floor and, after a quick inspection, chucked it in his mouth. "Yuck!" Daniel grinned. "Tastes just fine." She'd have to bring up the subject soon, or Cherry would be back. "So, it's nice Cherry can stay a bit longer." "Uh-huh. You got any more of those tomatoes?" She threw him another. "Lucky her, eh? Did her boss call or something? Just to see if she wanted to spend longer on holiday?" "I don't know. Maybe." "Bit weird, though, having your boss call you when you're away, just to see if you want to extend your trip." She smiled. "Yeah. Actually, now I remember. I think she rang in to see if they needed her to do any early morning viewings on her first day back, and it just came up. They're quiet at the moment, apparently, and her boss is keen for Cherry to use up some of her time."
"But originally, she was going home today. That was the plan."
"Yeah. Why do you ask?"
"No reason."
"Come on, there must be a reason."
Laura tried to laugh it off. "I was just wondering. That was what we'd agreed on."
"Yeah, of course it was."
She smiled casually, but her silence said something else. It suddenly occurred to him.
"Do you think Cherry had a different day in mind?"
"Did she?" He was getting irritated now.
"No. Look, we discussed the dates with you, she booked the flight, and I sent over the £600.
It took all her effort to keep a pleasant expression, to remain calm. £600. "You paid?" she said lightly.
"Yes, a trainee estate agent doesn't earn that much."
She heard the warning in his voice and smiled genially.
I can imagine.
Anyone passing Cherry's bedroom at that moment might have been disconcerted by how still she was. So still, eyes fixed ahead with great intensity. If that person had come into the room, he would have seen she was staring at the dresser, or, more accurately, the book on the dresser. That person would have wondered what about it could hold someone's penetrating stare. Cherry repositioned it so the spine was parallel to the edge of the dresser. She knew it had been picked up, looked at, the document hidden at the back taken out. And that document's information was probably fermenting like some sort of multiplying bacteria right now in Laura's brain. Cherry was livid, but knew better than to confront her. No, there would be another way to deal with this. For now, she would keep it to herself.
14. Cherry showed no sign of leaving. The days drifted by, lazy, plentiful, and filled with sunshine. Laura kept waiting for her to say when her time was used up, or talk about when she had to go back to work, but Cherry never mentioned it. Suggestions for day trips that they could all do together completely dried up. Laura didn't quite feel the enthusiasm she had before. They fell into a pattern. At breakfast, she would wonder what they had planned for the day. If they were going to the beach, Laura now felt a sense of relief if they did, as she wouldn't have to continue to make polite conversation. Instead, she would lie by the pool, peaceful but lonely, and she found herself starting to resent Cherry's presence. This was her vacation too, and she hadn't counted on having her son's girlfriend present the entire time. She wanted some time with Daniel too, just the two of them. She broached the subject once more with him, a few days after Cherry was meant to have gone home. To his due, he was apologetic, and offered straight away to find a hotel they could stay in instead. But then Laura realized she wouldn't see him at all, so on the spur of the moment, she'd dissuaded him. The tension was starting to get to her in other ways too. She would mislay things. Her keys would disappear from the kitchen worktop. Her toothbrush would be in the bin, fallen from the sink above. And a deep scratch appeared on her rental car, which must have happened when she'd parked in the village. It wasn't just Cherry's continued presence that was bothering her. There was also the issue of the cost of the flight. The ticket had definitely shown a fee of £500. Of that she was certain. And yet Daniel had said he'd paid her £100 more. She was well aware of the vast gulf between the two of them in wealth, and she didn't like the way her mind was thinking. 2 days before Laura was to go home, it suddenly occurred to her that Cherry would likely still be at the villa when she herself had gone back to London. This notion irritated her so much that she was quite monosyllabic when they said they were going into Saint-Tropez for the day. She waved them off and then went outside to the pool to retrieve her bikini, which she'd left on the drying rack the day before. It wasn't there, and Laura looked around. She could swear she'd hung it out the previous night. Then she saw it blown into the dirt. She went to retrieve it and saw it was filthy, as if it had blown off when it was still wet, which was odd as it hadn't been windy at all the previous evening. Sighing, she took it inside to wash. As she ran the tap, she considered how much, if anything, she could challenge Cherry about. She could hardly ask her how much her flight had cost, as it would sound like a direct accusation, but she decided she would ask her again when she was planning to leave. That she was entitled to do. Cherry would stretch out this trip another 3 days. After all, funerals in France take so long to organize, and there were all her grandmother's things to go through. Neil had been appropriately sympathetic and had agreed to the extended compassionate leave when she'd phoned to tell him her grandmother, sadly, had passed away. It had been a simple decision not to tell Laura exactly how long she planned on staying. It served her right for nosing through her things. Who the fuck did she think she was, snooping through her private stuff? She was so in your face all the time, always asking questions, wanting to spend every waking minute with Daniel and her. Laura probably thought it was her God-given right to look around their bedroom. Cherry sighed. She so wished it hadn't become like this. It would have been so nice if they'd hit it off. Cherry was of the opinion it was important to get on with your boyfriend's mother, and it bothered her that she didn't. She held Daniel's hand as they wandered around Saint-Tropez, bags slung over their shoulders, hats shielding their eyes, as they walked flip-flops, kicking up sand and dust. They headed through Place de Lys, where the old guys played boule in the dappled shade under the plane trees. Then they made their way down to the port, where the yachts looked too big for the harbour.
"What was it again?" asked Daniel, wanting to hear her say it.
"A blue short flared skirt and matching blue and white striped cotton top. An exact colour match," she said with a shudder. He looked at her legs.
How short?
She pulled his hat down over his face.
Okay, sorry.
He grinned.
So then what?
I was out with a couple of friends one day and saw the girl whose hand-me-down it was, and I happened to be wearing it at the time.
So?
You don't understand. It was humiliating. I was so embarrassed I ran across the road in the hope she wouldn't spot me. That was when the car hit me.
What?
He looked at her horrified. She tucked her arm into his. In the end, it was only a sprained ankle, along with a lot of bruising.
You could have been killed.
At the time, I was more concerned about whether or not the full story would get out at school. I was only 14, remember? Fortunately, the girl didn't figure out why I'd run away like that. In fact, said Cherry, suddenly realizing, I've never told anyone before now. Daniel took her hand and squeezed it, and she smiled. Occasionally, these stories that had haunted her childhood were useful, and unlike some of the things she'd said, they were actually true. Daniel was pulling her across the street. What? She said, bemused, and then looked up and saw they had wandered into the narrow streets of the old village, where all the boutiques were, and they seemed to be heading straight for Dior. Her heart fluttered. He was intent on something, but she couldn't quite work out what. They were inside. She looked around at the pristine decor with its select wares, items that seemed to mock her with their superiority, and she grew nervous. It was all well and good, that hard-time story prompting him to suggest a shopping trip, but she couldn't afford anywhere near these prices. It's too nice to be inside shop... on me, he said quietly. She stared at him, wide-eyed. Anything you want. In fact, let's try on loads. I like that yellow shirt, what do you think? She looked at where he was pointing, then back at him again. It still hadn't sunk in.
You'd better hurry up, because we've got the others to do yet.
Others? She managed to croak.
Don't ask me what they're all called. I never remember all the names, but they do have some nice clothes.
He smiled apologetically, indicating his modest attire.
So I'm told.
Cherry couldn't quite believe what she was hearing. I can't... She started half-heartedly.
It's my birthday present to you,
he said firmly. And that made it okay. He seemed to be as keen as she was, taking garments off racks and holding them up against her, waiting patiently outside changing rooms and giving constructive comments that proved he was actually looking at the clothing. He also paid for everything. Cherry didn't go mad. She didn't want to look greedy or take advantage of his wealth. A couple of items she turned down, saying she had too many, but she still acquired 5 or 6 pieces of designer clothing. After the last shop, with just one to go, Daniel seemed to flag, but gamely kept up his offer.
Do you want to do the last one? He said, nodding across the street.
Cherry sensed he'd had enough. She kissed him on the lips. No, thank you. This has already been the perfect morning. He looked relieved, and she realized he'd made quite a sacrifice. You don't like shopping, do you? Guilt flashed across his face. Then he saw her laughing.
Can't stand it. Now you sit here.
He indicated a bench in the shade.
And I'm going across to the boulangerie to get us some lunch.
Cherry was happy to rest and watch him stroll up one of the streets. She looked lovingly down at her bags, still glowing with the blissfulness of it all. A stupid smile adorned her face as she ran through her head all the new clothes she had. Maybe she could wear one of the dresses tonight. The smile suddenly faltered. Laura would likely have an opinion about this lavish spending spree. Things had been decidedly distant between them the last few days. Nothing that Daniel would particularly notice, but she was very aware that the liberal welcome when she'd first arrived had disappeared. Never mind that all these clothes were a gift, and one that Daniel had instigated through no conscious prompting of hers. The fact was he'd just spent nearly 2,000 euros on her. Cherry sat up uncomfortably. She didn't want to arouse any suspicion as to why she was with Daniel. It would just complicate things. As she was gazing around distractedly, she saw in a shop window across the street a painting that looked familiar. Then she recognized it as being by the artist that Laura had at the villa. Gathering her bags, she walked over to the gallery and peered in. It was displayed on a small wooden easel, an oil of Saint-Tropez harbour. It cost 3,500 euros, and it had a sold sticker on it. The bell tinkled as she walked in, and she knew she didn't have long. Daniel would be back any minute. She scanned the gallery quickly and found more paintings by the same artist displayed on the back wall. Sold, 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 she saw, and then a smaller one, an oil of Place de Lys, the dappled shade of the dozens of plain trees casting a lace-like pattern on the sandy ground. Miraculously, it seemed to be available. She would be in debt on her credit card for months, but she knew instinctively it was worth it. The gallery manager wrapped the painting, she paid, and then quickly left the shop, returning to her spot on the bench, hiding the package in one of the clothing bags. Daniel was barely a couple of minutes later, and arrived slightly red-faced, as if he had been running. He apologized for taking so long, but he had a baguette and a tarte au citron for lunch. They sat in the square and ate, watching the Boule players, and then headed on back to the villa. Isabella's car was in the drive when they pulled up, and as they walked in, they could hear numerous voices. Bridget was there too, along with Nicole.
"Here they are," said Isabella, who'd obviously had a couple of glasses of wine. "Did you have a nice day?"
"Lovely, thanks," said Cherry.
"So I can see," said Isabella, smiling down at her bags.
"Do we get a fashion show?" asked Bridget.
Cherry blushed.
"No."
"Well, at least let us see what you got."
She was pawing at the bags, trying to peek in, and Cherry bit back her annoyance. She pulled out a dress from one of the bags to exclamations of appreciation and envy.
"What else?"
demanded Bridget, and Cherry wished she'd shut up. "Just a shirt and a top."
"In all these bags?" she said disbelievingly. "Come on, what's all the secrecy? Pretty please, can we see?"
Laura had remained quiet during all this, but Cherry could sense she wanted to know what was in the bags. Isabella and Bridget were looking at her with inquisitive, expectant eyes. She had no choice, and soon all the garments were out, being appraised and cooed over. Cherry caught Laura looking at her in curiosity. She knew she was wondering how she'd managed to pay for all the clothes.
"You seem to have made a successful tour of the shops," Laura said pleasantly.
"Not all of them," said Daniel with relief.
"You went too?" Bridget was amazed. "How did you manage to persuade Daniel to go shopping?"
"It was my idea," he said, smiling. He put his arm around Cherry and kissed her. "Happy birthday. Sorry it was late."
Laura's face remained impassive. Now is the time, thought Cherry. She went to the bag that held the wrapped painting, and pulling it out, handed it to Daniel.
"This is for you."
He took it in surprise.
"What is it?"
"Open it," she said, smiling.
He pulled off the tissue, and his face lit up.
"But it's..."
He trailed off. Cherry nodded.
"I saw it and just wanted you to have it."
It had almost bankrupted her, but it had been necessary. He loved it, she saw, but was clearly concerned.
"You mustn't. You can't."
Cherry put up a finger.
"Nope, I don't want to hear it. I wanted to get you something special."
"No."
She put the finger on his lips.
"Shush."
He looked at the painting again, eyes lit up, and he threw an arm tightly around her neck, kissing her.
"Thank you. I absolutely love it."
He was incredibly touched, she saw, and was glad she'd done it.
"Yours was a present,"
he gently admonished. He kissed her again. Over his shoulder, she saw Laura looking on with uncertainty. She was probably trying to work out how she'd got the euros to pay for the painting. Let her wonder. Laura slept badly that night. So many things were niggling her. Daniel had paid for Cherry's flights and seemingly extra, and then all the clothes. He'd clearly spent a fortune, and to be fair, Cherry understandably would have struggled to pay for either. So why the painting? How could she afford a 2,000 to 3,000 euro original oil when she couldn't pay for her own flights? It kept her awake until 2 in the morning, and she woke early too, around 6. The unsettled, slightly queasy feeling in the pit of her stomach wouldn't go away, so she got up and went down to the kitchen to get a glass of water. As she held the glass under the tap, it slipped from her fingers and smashed in the sink. Laura swore. She seemed to be so clumsy these days, dropping things, losing things. She still had to get the rental car fixed, and now it was too late, as she was leaving the following day. She carefully picked the pieces of glass from the sink and placed them on an old newspaper, then got herself another glass and filled it, drinking slowly, the same questions from the night before still hammering away in her head like a pinball machine, but no clear answers came. Laura stretched her aching, twitching limbs. Although it was the last day of her supposedly relaxing holiday, she felt more stressed and exhausted than before she'd arrived. Cherry had changed everything. She'd made herself at home and yet had so far proven unwilling to spend much time with her hostess. In fact, Laura got the distinct impression she was barely tolerated. She picked up the painting Cherry had bought for Daniel. The light caught the plain trees, the sandy shadows of the square. It was truly beautiful. No wonder Daniel treasured it.
"It is an original."
Laura spun round and saw Cherry standing in the doorway,
just in case you were wondering.
How long have you been there?
She burst out, irritated, guilty, although Cherry could hardly read her mind.
Not long.
Cherry smiled and walked over and took the painting from her, met her eye. Anything else you want to check out? Laura was puzzled. What did she mean? She was only looking at it, for heaven's sake. She was about to retort when a cold, dousing memory returned to her. The day she'd gone into their room. Cherry's things, her flight details. Did she know they'd been looked at, read? Daniel appeared and put his arm around Cherry.
Still fancy the beach?
She smiled. Sure, I'll just get my stuff. And she went back upstairs.
How about you, Mum? Last day of hitting the rays?
No, thank you.
What's up?
She hadn't intended to sound so curt, but she'd just about reached her limit.
Cherry had a nice holiday?
He frowned.
Yeah, really good. Is something wrong?
Oh, come on, you really don't know. She's been here quite a long time.
I thought you said it was okay.
Laura sighed.
I did, but let's face it, I didn't expect it to be quite so long.
I'm sorry. I would have got us a hotel. I did offer.
It's fine, said Laura tightly. I would like to know, though, why it's such a big secret the day she's leaving.
It's not a secret.
But when I asked, she wouldn't say, and she hasn't volunteered any information since.
Laura felt the tension of the last few days rise up in her. How long is she intending to stay anyway? Weeks, months, the entire summer?
She's leaving on Saturday.
She was brought up short.
Saturday? What? The day after tomorrow?
Yes, she's got to go back to work.
Right. So why hasn't she said?
She has. I've known for ages.
But she didn't think of telling me.
I probably forgot. Sorry, I should have thought. If I'd known we were invading your space, we would have moved out. Honestly.
Laura swallowed her dismay.
We.
He kept saying we. She had missed her son the last couple of weeks.
You know that's not what I wanted.
They fell silent. Both had more to say, but neither wanted to go on.
We'd really like it if you came to the beach, Mum. I'd really like it. Just for a couple of hours.
She almost did.
Almost. Sorry, Daniel. I promised I'd meet up with Izzy.
It was obvious she'd made it up, and she felt bad for it. But how could she explain there was something about Cherry that didn't add up? And she was sure she wasn't imagining the awkwardness between them. It was clear from the hurt look on his face that he thought she didn't like his girlfriend.
Okay, well, I'll see you later.
It was just a brief peck, and then he got Cherry and they were gone. She felt guilty for fabricating the visit to Izzy, so she decided to try to make it the truth and drove down to Saint-Tropez. But unluckily for Laura, Isabella wasn't in. She stood for a moment at her friend's empty villa, wondering what to do with herself, and then thought she'd just go home again. She packed her suitcase for the following morning, then decided to go outside and see if any of the peppers or tomatoes needed picking. She took a colander from the kitchen and managed to while away half an hour or so, even forgetting about Cherry for a bit. And then she heard voices from the kitchen. She considered staying outside for a bit longer, but she knew that would be churlish. So, with a sigh, she went in with a red and yellow pepper and four beef tomatoes.
"We're getting quite a crop this year,"
she started to say, and then she saw their faces.
"What's the matter?"
Daniel was holding his painting. It had a tear in the canvas, about an inch long, right across the centre of Place de Lys. Laura was horrified.
"How on earth? Your beautiful painting!"
"It was on the broken glass," said Daniel, "when we came in."
On the worktop was the glass she'd broken earlier and had forgotten to wrap and put in the bin.
"But what was it doing there?"
She looked at them both, but Cherry wouldn't meet her eye. Instead, she gazed ruefully down. It took a moment before it sank in. Then she dismissed it, laughed. She stopped short, incredulous.
"What?"
"Whatever happened, it was likely an accident," Cherry said graciously. Laura was dumbfounded.
"You don't really think it was me?"
"No, Mum. I just don't know how it happened. We came home and found it lying on the broken glass."
"I meant to clear it up earlier, but I forgot."
Laura stopped, realizing she was sounding guilty.
"Paintings don't just rip by lying on glass. They have to be torn, slashed."
Upset, she stopped.
"I'm very sorry about your painting," she said to Daniel, "but I really have no idea how it came to be damaged."
She flicked her eyes across to Cherry, who was staring at the floor, crestfallen. Dinner was quiet. No one mentioned the painting.
Laura made her excuses early and went to bed. The following morning, Daniel loaded her bags into the back of his car. Cherry stood in the open doorway and shook her hand.
"Thank you very much for a lovely stay, Laura."
That's the first time she said it, thought Laura, and she tried to bury the irritation at being waved off from her own front step. Daniel was quiet on the way to the airport, and Laura felt a bout of sadness that they weren't on the same good terms they usually were. She wanted to try to clear the air before she flew back home.
"You do know I wouldn't dream of doing something like that to your painting, don't you?"
she said, not quite believing she was having to say it.
"Yes, of course."
"You don't sound convinced."
He took his eye off the road for a second and smiled at her.
"Hey, maybe it's just one of those unexplained things."
Such as what? Laura thought, but it was clear the subject was closed, and nothing would be gained by flogging it to death. She knew she hadn't done it, and it was hardly likely Daniel had, which left either Cherry or a random accident. She couldn't make sense of the latter, but she, equally, couldn't understand why Cherry would do it. It was hard to comprehend, but there was something else distracting her, a niggling disquiet. Cherry was still in her house. Cherry watched the car pull away and disappear around the end of the drive. So she was gone. It was a huge relief. Laura knew things, she was certain of it. Cherry knew she'd not booked a return flight, maybe even knew Daniel had paid a tiny bit more than it had actually cost. She'd been in desperate need of some new swimwear, unable to afford it, and anyway, it was for him. It was important to her to look nice for him. So now the suffocating mother was gone. She could let her hair down. She could be free to enjoy this magnificent house. Cherry caressed the backs of chairs as she wandered through the living room. She straightened the tea towels in the kitchen and saw the painting lying ripped on the counter. Such a shame. All that money on her credit card that she still had to pay off. It made her feel sick and slightly panicky, but it had been necessary. Cherry needed to untangle those motherly bindings Laura still kept wrapped tight. She needed Daniel on her side, now that Laura had been snooping. She picked up an apple from the fruit bowl and went out onto the terrace. She ate it delicately as she gazed out at the Saint-Tropez Peninsula and thought of Laura here and wondered whether she fully appreciated it and how often she bothered to come. From what Daniel had said of his mother's job, she worked hard and put in long days. Cherry inwardly snorted, full of contempt for the waste of such a beautiful house. Months probably passed with no one enjoying it other than the spiders, which still managed to concoct webs every week before the cleaner got them, and the birds who dipped their beaks at the edge of the pool. Cherry knew that if she owned this villa, she'd be here for weeks or months at a time. She watched the famous distant harbour and felt a great sense of well-being, of belonging, as if all those yachts, the beaches, the sun-warmed streets and the lavish lifestyle were within touching distance, there for the taking. Lying in bed that night, Cherry picked up her book while she was waiting for Daniel to come out of the bathroom. She heard him come in, and then he got on the bed and tilted the book away from her face. She looked up to see he had a small box in his hand.
"I wanted to wait until we were alone for this one," he said.
She looked at it in delight. It was turquoise blue velvet. A box like that could only mean jewelry. Tentatively, she opened it up and gasped. Lying on the silk lining was a slim gold bangle set with a single stone of soft, shimmering blue.
"It's a moonstone, for your birth month, apparently, although I have to confess that bit was a coincidence. I just liked it. Thought it would suit you."
She threw her arms around him.
"Thank you. I love it."
"Happy birthday. Again."
He kissed her, and then took it out of the box, and she held out her slim, tanned wrist. He fastened the clasp, and she watched how the stone gleamed mysteriously as she moved her arm. It was the most beautiful piece of jewelry she had ever seen. It was then that Cherry made her decision. Nicholas wasn't the only one who could get married. She was going to have Daniel Cavendish. 15. Friday, July 4. Laura came home to excruciating noise. Her neighbour's basement extension was in full swing, and as irritating as it was, she had to tolerate it, for only 12 months before, she'd been doing the same thing. She was supposed to be working from home that afternoon on some proposals she'd pitched to ITV at her lunch in a couple of weeks. Soon after she got back from the airport, a writer arrived, one Laura liked and enjoyed working with, and who was favoured by ITV after a respectable success with a miniseries for them the previous year. She opened the door to him, and they had to shout their hellos above the noise of the excavator. They worked hard on a joint idea they had about a drama set in an exclusive private school, and despite the racket, they made good progress. The only interruption was a brief power cut from the builders, which meant that the internet was down for an hour or so, hampering research. By mid-afternoon, the writer had enough material to go ahead and write a treatment, a summary of the series. It was an investment Laura would have to bear the cost of, and at his rate, not a cheap one. But drama development was notoriously expensive. She felt it was worth it, as she sensed there was a good chance Allison and Sean would go for this project. After he left, the builders packed up and went home too. It was late afternoon, but Laura knew the weekend would not yet have started for everyone. She toyed with the idea a bit, and then, before she lost her courage, she picked up her bag and left the house. Laura walked the short distance to Highsmith and Brown real estate agents and browsed the window outside. Lots of beautifully photographed houses, some costing millions, some casually stating their price was on application. After she'd spent what she thought was a reasonable time looking, she stepped inside. A dapper-looking man, who was with a gentleman of retirement age, looked up. He seemed harassed, perhaps more so when a young girl approached her hesitantly.
"Hi, can I help you?"
Laura wanted to speak to the well-dressed man, not this girl, who was clearly much more her junior. She knew from the website he was the manager. She reminded herself of his name. "Neil."
"I'm just going to take a look at these,"
indicated Laura, and she moved over to a stand of house details. The girl left with a grateful nod, glad to have escaped. Laura wondered how long she would have to pretend interest in the houses. Perhaps she could write something down, take some notes. She was about to dig in her handbag for some paper and a pen when she heard the retired man finish up. Her heart was hammering as he left, but she made herself catch Neil's eye. He smiled at her.
"Was there something I can do for you?"
He was forthright, professional. She would have to be careful.
"Yes, I'm looking for something with four bedrooms. I've always fancied a muse."
He indicated a chair on the opposite side of his desk.
"Would you like to take a seat?"
She did.
"Perhaps I can start by taking some details," said Neil,
and Laura realized it would be better if she made up a false name and address. She panicked and could think of nothing except Isabella's, which she gave, mentally asking her forgiveness, just recovering enough to alter her mobile number and email address slightly. He started to scroll through some houses on his iPad.
"You're very busy,"
began Laura. Lamely, she thought.
"Yes, time of the year."
He looked up and nodded at a couple who were waiting impatiently. She knew she had to do this sooner rather than later.
"We have this rather lovely place,"
he started, showing her some photos on the screen.
"In Lexham Gardens. It's not a mews, but it's four bedrooms and three bathrooms."
"Great. Can I take a hard copy?"
He delved into a file at the side of his desk and pulled out a luxurious printout. Then he began to scroll through again.
Think. God, I am so useless at this.
You could do with some more help."
He smiled a professional smile.
"Yes, well, normally there's four of us, but the summer season seems to have started earlier."
"Oh, so some of the staff are on holiday, are they?"
"He's just said that, you fool," thought Laura. She saw his eyes wanted to hurry things along.
"Yes, three, in fact."
"Oh, bad planning."
As might be expected, he said nothing to this, but Laura decided to plough on.
"Isn't there usually a girl in here? Dark hair, short, young?"
"You mean Cherry? Yes, she's off too."
The sweet, ineffectual girl was hovering.
"Excuse me, Neil, but is the house on Victoria Road under offer now?"
He held up his hand, a wait signal. Then he smiled at Laura.
"I'm afraid we don't have anything else available at the moment, but I can certainly let you know as soon as new properties come on."
"That would be great."
Laura suddenly felt silly, like she was playing a childish game, making something out of nothing. She stood, and Neil shook her hand. Almost as soon as she'd vacated the seat, the couple swooped in. Embarrassed, she walked toward the door, still trying to look like a bona fide buyer, whatever that was. Goodness knows what she'd thought she'd find out. There was nothing to find out. The only thing that absolutely did not add up was Cherry saying that Neil had called her and encouraged her to take more time off. He was clearly woefully understaffed.
"She's back next week,"
said the girl, as Laura headed for the door. She looked up.
"Cherry, you were asking about her. Back on Monday."
There was a poorly hidden note of relief to the girl's voice. Laura nodded. She knew. She looked for a moment at the girl and saw how out of her depth she was. Poor thing. She smiled.
Last day? The girl grimaced. Tomorrow.
Then regretting her unprofessionalism.
Sorry, shouldn't say that, should I? I won't tell anyone.
The girl grinned.
Thanks. I was beginning to think she'd never come back.
Delayed return? Laura spoke with understanding and empathy. She knew perfectly well Cherry had extended her trip.
Do you know her?
A sigh escaped.
A little.
She quickly smiled and kept the pressure valve shut up tight again. She hadn't meant to sigh. She didn't really want anyone to know about her anxiety, but the worry had been hers alone for a few days now.
Understandable, though.
Laura stopped.
Yes,
she said again, not knowing what they were talking about. But something stirred, something that made her alert.
I remember when my grandmother died. Norfolk, though, not the south of France. A bit easier to get to the funeral.
Laura was still standing there, rocked, trying to stay calm, trying to look sympathetic as if she knew that Cherry's grandmother had died. But every bit of energy seemed to be occupied by the unfurling realization. Cherry must have made it up, made up her grandmother's death. Did she even have a grandmother? So she could be in the south of France at her boyfriend's villa. It couldn't be true. Otherwise, she would have told Daniel and he would have told her. No wonder Neil had had no choice but to let her go away when his other staff members were also off. She glanced up at him and saw him look at her strangely. Perhaps he was wondering why she was still there, and it focused her enough to get out. With a brief thank you and goodbye to the girl, who never knew just how much she'd done for Laura, she left the agency and didn't look around or slow down until she was back in her own road. Then it hit her again. She stopped in the middle of the pavement, and goosebumps rose up on her arms. Cherry had made it all up.
16. Friday, July 18. It threw her into turmoil. When she'd left France, there was something she didn't quite trust about Cherry, but she never really expected to find anything out. Now it was real. Cherry had lied to her boss to get time off. She'd lied to them, too, or been economical, at least, with the truth. And Laura felt hurt. She'd been manipulated. She was reminded of the scheming Cherry had done to get her job. And then there was the money. Cherry had seemingly cheated Daniel out of £100, so it raised the dark, uncomfortable question, was Cherry a gold digger? There had been no one to talk to. Laura had considered bringing it up with Howard, but it had been a long time since she'd confided in him about anything. Izzy was still in France, and it wasn't the sort of thing she could discuss on the phone, so she'd left it to brew and fester in her own mind. Daniel was due home later that day, and as much as she'd been looking forward to seeing him, she was now also slightly dreading it. They'd spoken on the phone a few times, and things were more or less back to normal between them, but now she had this thing, and she didn't know what to do with it. His return home was only for a few days, as he was moving out into his new flat the following week. Laura had arranged a barbecue for close family and friends to send him off. It would be the first time she'd see Cherry since the holiday. Cherry, who now infiltrated her mind every minute of the day, winding around like a creeper and making her uncomfortable, uneasy. The nightmares had come back, out of the blue, dark thoughts that she'd tried to bury. They had started before Daniel was even born. She'd dreamed she'd had another baby, but had forgotten all about him, only remembering 3 days later that she'd left him in the wardrobe in a pram. Panicked, she'd pull him out, neglected, near starving, and he'd look at her, wide-eyed and confused, not knowing why he'd been abandoned. Guilty relief would swamp her, relief she'd got to him in the nick of time, but somewhere in the back of her head, she knew she'd do it again. She'd let him down again. And so she did, because the nightmare was recurring. Later, when she really did have her baby, she'd have black thoughts, visions, and panicked what-ifs would attack their way into her head, leaving her standing by, terrified and vulnerable, until she could gather herself enough to shake her head and force them out. She'd be walking him down the street in the pram, and as a car passed, she'd suddenly see nothing but its wheel and imagine Daniel whipped beneath it, his head crushed and mangled in the metal. She'd be in the shower and see him falling from an open window that she'd mistakenly left open, his tiny body lying inert on the paving below. A knife in the kitchen would become a gruesome blade that she would put out of sight,
even though he was happily cooing in his bouncy chair. Worst, she would hear on the news about a young child snatched, and she would plummet into nightmarish visions of Daniel calling for her, screaming out, confused as to why she didn't come, and finally broken when he realized she wasn't ever coming for him. She would start to hyperventilate, and have to get up, walk around the room to expel the images. They had been dark hours, nights, months, but they had gradually lessened as the years progressed, although they never disappeared completely. If Daniel was late coming home from school, or later, when he was at uni, and she heard of a car crash on the M11, her imagination would start breeding ideas, one horrific thought morphing into another at rapid speed, until she forcibly stopped them, telling herself he had just got talking to some friends, which he had, or hadn't been driving to or from Cambridge on the day of the accident, which he hadn't. Movement in front of her made her look up, and she saw Alison and Sean, the drama powers from ITV, had arrived at La Galette, the restaurant they'd picked for lunch. It was in upper ground, not far from their HQ, but still they were nearly 15 minutes late. Alison's PA had called to offer a girlish apology.
"They're so sorry."
However, she had managed to make it sound anything but. Sean came in first. With arms outstretched, he took her hands as she stood.
"Laura, we're so sorry. Got held up with Helen at the last minute."
Helen was the comptroller of ITV, and the rumours were she was fond of summoning people to her office in a very headmistress-like way, something that won her no love amongst her staff.
"Don't worry about it,"
said Laura affably. She'd met Sean a couple of times before and liked him, felt he had a nose for a good script, and wasn't afraid of speaking his mind.
"We only managed to get away by saying we had to see you," said Alison.
Laura was sure that Helen didn't give a flying fig whether or not they had a lunch date with an independent producer, and the false bolstering of her ego made her slightly nervous, as if she shouldn't trust anything Alison said. "As well I shouldn't," thought Laura wryly. Nothing had changed there. As they took their seats, she wondered what had briefly unsettled her, and it wasn't Alison's throwaway flattery. It took more than that to put her off balance. It was this uncertainty with Cherry. She had to put it out of her mind for the next hour or so. This lunch could be pivotal to the future of her company. Sean looked at her through his dark-rimmed square glasses.
"Thank you so much for coming, Laura, and thank you for Pillow Fight. I've seen two